This is the Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Search Security. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 94th in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I'm pleased to have today with me Ming Chow. Hi, Ming.
Hi, how are you doing, Gary?
I'm good. Ming Chow is a lecturer at the Tufts University Department of Computer Science. He focuses on mobile, web, and game engineering with an emphasis on security. His hugely popular courses are designed to be hands-on and have been lauded by the American Society for Engineering Education for their creative approaches. Ming began his career as a professional developer at Harvard, and he's a sought-after speaker at security conferences. He lives in Massachusetts, so thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is quite an honor. I'm joining a long line of luminaries here.
So you have a hands-on approach to teaching, very hands-on. How did working as an actual developer at Harvard from 2002 to 2010 inform your teaching?
Well, most of the stuff that I did at Harvard, I did not learn from Tufts. I had to learn from understanding the problem, getting a few books, going to Google, and just trying and experimenting. And even more so now, I mean, this development stack is too big. What I do in my classes is I teach them the real basics, the big ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the assignments, look, you're going to have to, you know, I'm trying to prepare you for the real world. And in the real world, how it works is you learn by experimenting, you learn by doing. And we don't have enough of that here.
Right, so your focus is on that, I guess.
Exactly. So I have the students, you know, I put together assignments where it mimics real-world problems.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a couple of examples, maybe?
Yeah, sure. One example in my web programming class, I have students write a web application for, you know, to manage FreeCycle. I mean, FreeCycle is the idea of, okay, if you don't want to throw anything away, but you want to donate it, you want to build a web application for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is during a time when I talk about web applications, and what I go through is I talk about the basics of, in this case, Node.js, persistent databases. Mm-hmm. I can't teach you everything with the server-side languages or, you know, the technologies. You got to go hack it up. But I expect you to make mistakes as well, too. This is actually a real unique example where I fully expect the students to make the mistakes building the web application for FreeCycle. For example, no input validation.
Right. And then you go back later and expose those errors?
It's actually better than that. A lot better. In fact, when I talk about web security, directly after I talk about server-side and web applications, I give some in-class demos, but for their follow-up assignment to the FreeCycle assignment is they pair up mm-hmm. with another student in the class, randomly selected. You have to audit his or her FreeCycle web application and find all the vulnerabilities, including cross-site scripting, injection attack, or directory traversal,
mm-hmm.
Configuration management. This is one of those, you know, security is one of those areas where you're going to have to learn by making mistakes.
I bet they find that pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. Not only do you collaborate, there's very little coding involved, but it's about breaking things. It's about breaking things apart. And not only breaking things apart, but also seeing, wow, I broke this thing, and this is all the information I could steal. I could actually see all the posts that everyone in the world made, all 100 of them, mm-hmm. you know? And that's always a nice one, especially it's a collaborative one. It's
right.
A collaborative assignment.
So when it comes to creating and inspiring new software security practitioners, which, you know, usually come out of universities, Would you start with people who know how to code already or security people?
Well, I took a look at myself, and how did I go through this? I started out as, I've always said that if you want to be a good developer, you want to start off testing.
Mm-hmm.
So in testing, in QA, you see all the bugs, and you see all the mistakes that people are making. And having that exposure will prepare you to be a much better developer.
Right. It teaches you about robustness and corner cases and edge conditions and so on.
And so with security, it's the same idea. With software security, excuse me. But with software security, I mean, you got to know how to build software. I mean, you got to understand the process, the decision making, and, of course, the different frameworks. It's the same idea on learning how to be a developer. I never understand how you can understand software security without ever having building software.
Right, right. So, because you have a bunch of experience building web stuff, I think some before you even really started thinking about security, what do you think that most developers think of software security these days, if anything?
I think there's a couple of things. It still amazes me people still think software security as security software.
Right, so they get confused about the feature issue.
The terminology, I mean, the words are the same, although reversed, but they have completely different meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And the ordering of the words is very significant. I mean, people think of software security as antivirus, you know, adding at web application firewalls,
mm-hmm.
You know, the traditional patch and play.
Well, there's sort of three things. There's software security, there's security software, and there's securing software that's fielded that are mixed together, it seems like.
And not only do I see a mixture up of the terminology, I still see, in general, a lot of developers have no idea what security is.
So do they even have a clue about security features? Are they aware of things like authentication and use of cryptography to protect data or not?
Well, I'm not even so sure, Gary, because even if you bring up, you know, encryption and cryptography, they're not even using it correctly.
Right.
I mean, here's a case in point. I mean, I know we're talking about the context of web application here. I mean, take a look at mobile. I mean, mobile and web, which I do a lot of work in, both areas. I mean, you take a look at Snapchat. I mean, Snapchat decided to roll their own cryptography, and you know those stuff are eventually going to get cracked somehow in some way.
I right, mean, that's sort of a 101 level security mistake.
Yeah. They heard of the terminologies, you know, they've heard of encryption, they've heard of authentication, but are they, you know, did they not do it right? That's another question.
Right.
And that's the question that most people do not get.
Okay, so we have misunderstanding about security features, including misimplementation, rolling your own.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the idea of looking for bugs and flaws in your own design and implementation that could cause security problems, which I think is even further away from most developers' minds. Would you agree with that?
Well, it's amazing that I think it's like the second or third day of my intro to security class, that I go over terminology, and the notion is, you know, there's so much misconception, and on the first day, and on that class, most people think that there are very few, you know, they use the word bugs and flaws interchangeably.
Right, of course.
I mean, that's, and so it's an eye-opener for them when you even go through, like, basic terminologies, even, like, scanning and sniffing as well, too. I mean, people get that mixed up.
So do you think that developers have any idea about the kinds of tools that are available to look for bugs, like static analysis? And is there a way to get developers to use that technology, maybe by putting it into the IDE more effectively than we're doing today?
Yeah, I had a wonderful experience last semester. Last semester, I had just a phenomenal semester. I mean, I taught not only three amazing classes, but the students were phenomenal here. I mean, I've never, ever said that. And I'm glad you asked the question about static analysis. And this was, last semester was the first semester that I actually introduced the whole idea of not only static, but also dynamic analysis in my security class.
Uh-huh. And how did that go?
It was the first time that everyone have ever not only heard of it, but ever used it, used such a tool. So I'll be very honest with you. We used, thanks to Chris Weissoppel, a dear friend of ours, and he let us use Veracode's static analysis tool.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the students not only read up on static analysis, but also as a lab, just submit anything. And I mean anything, any binary out there, any code, anything. I don't care whether you wrote it or someone else wrote it, but I just want you to scan something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I just want you to scan something for this lab.
And what did you find out?
Well, we found out that obviously the interesting thing was the results. It could take anywhere between 3 minutes to a few hours to get. We found that out,
right.
But I mean, Veracode, of course, is working on them. But more importantly, they really got it. I mean, they were just, wow, here it is. We got this tool that we can just scan everything, and now we see all the problems. We saw all the PHP problems that I introduced in my Capture the Flag game this year. But what was really, really inspiring, which really made my day. So I also teach the capstone class, software engineering,
right,
which is required for all senior engineers, senior computer science majors through the School of Engineering. One of the students in that capstone class was also taking my security class. And there was a team of students who's working on a project for the Office of Sustainability here. And they wanted to learn more about security. And that student also said, one thing that we really got to do is to use, to use static analysis tools.
Mm-hmm.
So
he got to apply it in his senior work.
It demonstrated not only did he apply it, but also just brought it up. Just was exposed to static analysis, remembered it, and just even brought it up and mentioned.
Sure. The idea is if you expose kids to this when they're going through, then later when they get out in the real world, they'll remember and they'll want to use technology like that.
Oh, yeah. The key word is he was informed. I mean, that student was informed. I mean, he got many, many, many praise helmet stick. I mean, that really made my day.
So I want to put you in the Wayback Machine. I want you to think about the difference between when you were writing code as a web application developer and then when you started getting informed about security and you started thinking about security, and try to remember, what was the difference? What got you started in computer security in the first place? And then how were you like before you learned about it and then after you learned about it?
I graduated from Tufts as an undergrad in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked as a developer, the most important thing was get it done. I did a little bit testing, but it was never enforced.
Mm-hmm.
Now I work for Harvard, and of course that's very, very visible. And I mean they treat their name like it's sacred. And I did not go through, and it's still the same as it is right now, up to this very day. We're 2000, this is what, over 10 years later, that most academic institutions don't, most students go to a computer science curriculum are not even exposed to a single thing in security.
Right.
Not even.
Right.
Still the same thing up to this very day.
Starting to change a little. I mean, Morissette and some others are teaching some classes at Harvard on security.
Oh, yeah. Some are doing better than others, but you know, it's still, well, I guess for lack of a better term, it is what it is right now. But when I was, you know, I think it was around 2004. And I was starting to feel, look, I need some change in my life. I need to, personally and professionally, I'm not going anywhere. So I need to really get out of the shell, learn something new. And of course, I had no idea what I would get into, but some things, they just set up for you in life. And so I, in 2004, I signed up to go to the Usenix conference, annual conference, which was being held in Boston.
Mm-hmm, I remember that.
And I took a training course with Gary McGraw.
Never met him. What's he like?
Yeah.
Wow. It was a Usenix tutorial? Wow.
It was your tutorial where I got my first exposure to not only software security, but anything related to security. Anything related to security. Now, we're not talking about like cryptography.
Yeah. It was really a software security tutorial from what I recall.
Yeah. It was, and that was my first exposure to security, and more importantly, software security.
So did it make you then go back and say, gosh, I need to take a look at the stuff that I've built, and I need to change the way I'm building stuff going forward?
Well, not only that, but it really think, wow, you know, I've always heard, I never knew what security really meant. I never knew how to really apply it. I never knew what I think more importantly, I never knew what the value of security was in terms of for applications.
Yeah, why were you about
I understood
it.
That. Yeah. Why do I care?
Right.
Like, why do I care at all? And but I think there was even a bigger picture which I never even was exposed to, and that was about the whole idea of citizenship. The whole idea of being a good citizen, being informed,
doing stuff right. In the first place.
Yeah.
I think that most developers are like that, but they just don't really know what the right thing is in some cases.
And I was never exposed to that, not only at my 4 years studying here at Tufts, but also my years at, when I was working at Harvard. I never got any of that exposure. And I don't know what happened. I think things are set up for you in life. You know, I never got that exposure, and not only software security, but also the whole idea of citizenship, being a good citizen, being informed, teaching others, telling others, you know, that we are digging ourselves we have dug ourselves into a deep hole. I mean, right. This was a message that Ed Felton, and Dan Gear were stressing that whole day.
And so you decided to fix, you should help fix things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, back then, I remember the message was, we still have, like, you take a look at all these problems. I think it really became more apparent 2 years later, in 2006, when we were really seeing, you know what? No one cares. And you're seeing things getting attacked left and right.
So I think to some extent we've made pretty good progress since then, but there's still some room for improvement.
Well, there's not only room for improvement, but this is still an ongoing battle. You take a look at what we face right now, and this is the year 2014. You have websites and web applications, and now mobile applications are getting attacked left and right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of these things, most of the attacks, you take a look at cross-site scripting, SQL injection, request forgery.
Same old.
It's the same stuff we faced when I first learned this stuff in 2004.
We'll be right back after this message. This is Gary McGraw, your host for the Silver Bullet Security Podcast. If you like what you're hearing here, you should check out my monthly security column published by Search Security and Information Security Magazine. You can find the most recent column at searchsecurity.com/McGraw. All of my writings are collected on my webpage at www.sigital.com/gem/writings. Thanks for listening. Well, let me ask you this. One of the challenges you alluded to before, there's so much going on in development and in security, not to mention their intersection, that it's difficult to keep up. So, how do you keep up, and how do you expect students to kind of catch up to the edge and then somehow keep up?
Well, I was asked this question a couple years ago at a conference. How do you do this? I mean, I work a full-time job. I mean, this is some nice gentleman asked me, like, you know, I work a full development job, but how do you actually do all these things? Like, how do you get to, have all these opportunities to break things? I guess a lot of it is certainly, this is quite simply now, has become my passion. I mean, this whole area of security, privacy, politics, has been a deep passion of mine. So I think how I've kept up with it is...
Just living it.
Yeah, and you just got to...
I guess that's sort of advice, but what about some, you know, kids who are just getting started and they're trying to find their passion and...
Tinker.
Yeah, tinker. Good. I like that. Yeah.
You got to tinker. And I think now the entry for tinkering and breaking stuff and building stuff is very, very small. I mean, now you need what? I mean, if you want to break things, you know, build things, I mean, you need the tools at a cost in terms of a monetary cost are very minimal.
Right.
If you take a look at even mobile SDKs.
Pretty easy to get a
hold of. Yeah, just download them.
So, but there's kind of an issue that I want to explore with you, because you emphasize a lot of breaking in your work.
Yeah.
But isn't it a lot easier to teach somebody to break something than it is to teach them to build something?
Yeah, and so, look, if you want to learn, you got to learn how to build and, of course, to break. You got to do both things.
I agree.
No question about
hence the
that.
Yin-yang thing. You know, but in some sense, having written a ton on exploiting software and also building stuff properly, it seems like the exploiting stuff, the breaking stuff, is way sexier, and people just think, wow, I want to do that all the time, which doesn't really solve the problem these days. It certainly helps.
It doesn't, but not only are they sexier, they're just really, remember, this is, of course, the dilemma that we face at conferences.
Right.
I mean, you take a look at me. I mean, I've spoken at DEF CON twice, and you take a look at Black Hat. I mean, most of those talks... all about breaking things.
They are all about breaking things. I talked to Showstack about adding a building track, and they just wouldn't do it.
Because it's so easy to do. Remember, it's much easier to disprove than to prove something.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to disprove something than to prove something.
Okay, so in your own classes, how do you strike that balance?
How do I strike that balance is... Well, which one?
Well, between teaching people how to break stuff and teaching people how to build stuff. Maybe tell us about your introduction to game development course, why you used games, and what that has to do with security and how you work security into that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can give you a couple of examples. Actually, let's start with games because you asked for it. Because,
right.
Well, games encompasses every field of computer science. Okay, and I think for the longest times, I think there's one beautiful thing about games. If you take a look at the 70s, for example, you really want to learn about the games, how it works. I mean, you just build mods, you actually, try to hack the games.
Right.
And that's what John Carmack did when he did, before he created Doom and Quake. So what I do is, look, if you're going to create a game, the first thing that you have to do is not sit at the computer, but you got to write the game design document, the fix. Right? Do the game design document, okay? And then you work in a team to build that game using Pygame.
Mm-hmm.
We use Pygame. Well, it doesn't matter what it is. But, then try to make it multiplayer.
Right. So that's all the process of building, which is great. So they learn because they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then you work in security as well?
Well, in game development, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are required to read papers on, securing online games. And we go through a few examples, such as Pirates of the Caribbean, how you can use, they have a They have a wonderful Python scripting engine that you can help you walk on water.
I remember those hacks.
Oh, yeah, and how about this one? How about World of Warcraft, which is like the biggest bad boy of them all? Not only do you have... Now, World of Warcraft is wonderful because it has so much problems with not only the game, the binary itself, and spyware, for lack of a better word, but, you know, it comes with, if I'm not mistaken, the Warden, that actually records, like, every move, including memory process, a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, but the Warden runs in user land, so it's pretty easy to defeat, really.
Yeah, and, you know, all the time state attacks. But we also delve into even the greater issues, which is still uncharted territories, is what about virtual economies? What happens if someone steals your golden sword and you're reported to the law enforcement agencies?
It turns out that the judge doesn't care about your virtual property.
Oh, yeah. I remember I had a colleague of mine. He was at the United States Postal Inspection Service. This has, like, been a big problem. We get people calling us saying that they got their, like, golden sword stolen. And so I was thinking, oh, so someone stole your golden
sword. Your real golden sword.
You lost the game, yeah, right? No, and I say, I turned to find out that these people actually pay real money for these golden swords. Right. So that brings up a real serious hiccup. Or what about if you're on Second Life and you had to buy, like, or these... virtual environment game where people use real money to pay for real estate.
So let's cycle this back around. You teach kids about game development by having them actually develop games, and you teach them about security by showing them what happens when they do the wrong thing in their games.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come out not only knowing how to code and how to work in a team, but also knowing about software security, which to me is a really cool class. That's awesome.
And it's the and the thing is, it's about the exposure, the informing part. Because most classes don't even inform you, don't even mention a thing about security.
Right.
That's the thing. And most classes in academia land, you know, most, and I say most, in the computer science curriculum, they don't mention about security at all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I know that in our ABET accreditation, we got asked about where did you actually mention anything about security in the senior capstone class.
And you had a good answer for that one.
Well, actually, I had a great answer, but the auditor said, you know, we like what you do, but remember, you're not a required class.
Right, right.
Ooh, and I was like, yeah. So now what I do in my capstone class is... you know, yeah, you gotta build a full software product, but you know, in terms of the first semester, which is to put together the requirements and to put the design, you have to come up with abuse cases. You have to come up with abuse cases for your software,
right? How can and then test it against that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, one other thing that you do, and you did this in your senior capstone class, I know because I did it, is bring outside lecturers in. And you do that pretty often, lots of outside lecturers.
I do it more often or not now. I mean, I try to bring in, last semester I had world-class, and I mean...
And how did that go? What was good about it, and what was challenging about it?
Well, first of all, the students, you know, they like to hear someone other than me, because they've heard enough from me. I mean, they've had enough, and they get sick of hearing from me all the time, you know. But I bring in the outside guest speakers like you, Cade Crockford from the ACLU, Jeff Seibert from Twitter, because I want them to show them engineering in the real. I want them to talk about engineering in the real. I mean, these are the expectations. These are the challenges that you're going to face when you walk out of here. And I think there's been always this problem of bridging the gap between academia land and professional world.
Yep.
And so you're
addressing that head on in your work.
Yeah, you might. Well, you got to face any problem in life head on.
Yep.
And the students really thoroughly enjoy the outside guest speakers because it's engineering in the real. I mean, they show them real problems because ultimately most of these students, when they're going to graduate, they're going to be in that environment.
Yep. And you know, we can use as many people that have a clue about software security as you can produce on this planet. So thanks for making some. Please make more.
I shall, and I know that well, I know a couple of people are interviewing for the for not only internship but for full time position as well too. But you know, one thing I found out is finding good engineers and good hackers is extremely hard to find. Now, I mean, the caveat is this: I have a boatload of students, but very few people I can recommend.
Yeah, you got to have some people who are natural tinkerers and have been building stuff for a long time.
They're very hard to find.
It is a challenge. It is a challenge. All right, one more question, and this one's totally left field. I know you listen to a lot of music. What is the most obscure but really cool CD you currently have in your bit pile that you want to recommend to our 10,000 listeners?
You talk about compact disc?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be. You could be MP3s, whatever thing that you downloaded that's in your bit pile right now that you're listening to.
Ooh, something really, really whacked out. Like something completely whacked out right now that I've had. Let's see. I have so many because I listen to Asian music as well, too, like music from Hong Kong.
There you go. You can name that. That'd be good. We'll try to find it and put a link to it.
I mean, the ones I can recommend are, let's see, I have Castlevania, mm-hmm. the Symphony of the Night, the entire soundtrack. Phantom of the Opera, I have. I mean, so this is actually show you how deep I can really get. I had Sophie B. I think the one I really appreciate still up to this day, because I actually went to a show in Vegas, is Celine Dion, the White Album. This is the one.
I think that's the first time this has ever been said on Silver Bullet.
No. Dion. I went to Celine Dion, her concert in at Caesars, and put it this way, I was crying within the first 20 minutes.
You heard it here first. All right, well, we'll put a link to that.
Now, here's the caveat, though. Don't get the album that has Titanic, the Titanic theme on there, but get the White Album, the one where she has the Falling Into You, that album.
All right. You heard it here first. Thanks, Ming. It's been interesting talking to you today.
Oh, this was fabulous. Thank you so much again.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Sigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Search Security. The November-December issue of IEEE S&P Magazine is a special issue devoted to healthcare IT. The issue features our interview with ISC Squared Executive Director Hord Timpton. See www.computer.org/security for more. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.sigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.